B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
Equal.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Is there something about Shen or Tarasenko or Schwartz that makes them a tough matchup?
They're physical, they're fast. This is the line that makes this team click. The Shen line makes the St. Louis Blues what they are. The Bergeron line, they need to get back. They need to get ready. They're going to be seeing a lot of this line come Saturday. Craig Berube wants that matchup. It's been working for him in both games one and two. Bruce Cassidy had to change it up again tonight, throwing the Corrali line out there. First shift of the second period, first shift of the third period against them. So the matchups are going to be totally different coming into game three. This line, they have to score if the Bruins want to win a Stanley Cup. There's no way around it, Mike. They have to produce, whether it's on the PP, whether it's 5-on-5. They got to figure out a way to get the job done.
Okay, again, I don't think the first line has to carry you because you're a deep team. And you've gotten second. You're 1-1 in this series because you've got other lines and guys that can score. So I don't think it's all about the first line. But they would have to contribute like another line would have to contribute, you know, to have scoring depth. I mean, if you just transfer the problem and now your first line's a zero, but your third line is putting up all the points, where you're in the same position as if your first line's producing and your third line sucks. You see what I'm saying? Like, the whole point of having balanced scoring is that you still get the first line production and then others chip in. That's the idea. If you just transfer it from one line to the next, then you're in the same spot. So, Monty also points out there, rightly, that Cassidy has run away from that matchup here. The Shen line, he's moved Bergeron off that matchup. He has the last change in St. Louis. Berube, they're going to have to beat the Shen line. They're not going to be able to run from it unless they get really creative just running off the ice after faceoffs, which is a game you don't want to do, and you shouldn't have to do with the best line in hockey. All right, so back to your thoughts, as promised. Ed in Marshfield. Go ahead, Ed.
How are you guys?
Good, Ed. What do you got?
Yeah, I think the coaching let us down last night. Why is McAvoy chasing the puck behind the other team's net when the puck's not on his stick and Chara's back there and you got either Pastrnak or Marchand to help Chara? That's disgusting. You're up 2-1 in your home building and you're playing like it's no check night league.
Huh.
You know, how do you give the first line that kind of go ahead?
Well, but hold on. Is that a fair second guess? Should McAvoy not be pinching there in the first period?
So I got to go back and look at the play. I don't remember
how the whole thing developed.
Yes, did he have a chance at the puck? And I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. But at the end of the day, Marchand made a choice on that play. He made a choice. Chara then reacted to that. I'm going by Beers' assessment of it, okay? So, and again, this felt like universal criticism from all the hockey people. They said this to a man. Marchand made a choice on that play. Chara reacted. Chara did his part. Marchand didn't. So where do I go with that?
This is on Marchand and Pastrnak.
And I'm sorry, Mike, but the two goals that we're talking about, the one with Marchand last night and the Pastrnak one, those are freaking lazy, stupid plays.
Correctamundo.
Those are lazy, stupid plays.
Sean and Lynn, your thoughts. Sean.
I'm here.
Go. Okay, babe. Call's back. You know the number. We're taking calls, folks, so be ready to go if you're on hold. Pete and Agawam. Hi, Pete.
Yeah, how you doing? Mike, I had enough of Chara. You know, don't get me wrong. They say he's the biggest guy in the league, got the longest reach in the league. Granted, I know he's older and he can't keep up with the speed, but through all his whole playoff season, he's turned that goddamn puck over so many times. And I'm sorry, the second goal last night is on him.
No, it's not.
Because that puck. Yeah, it is.
He almost saved Pete.
Now, wait a minute. Let me finish. The puck was right there in front of him, and he's got that long reach. He did not do nothing until the guy scored. I'm sorry. That's just me.
You're wrong, Pete. He saved the first shot. Tarasenko had two rebound attempts. Zdeno Chara saved the first one. He almost bailed you out of that situation. He didn't. He didn't cause you the goal. He didn't give up the goal. He almost kept it off the board. Marchand had left both him and Rask out to dry. Out to dry. I'd put Rask higher than Chara. He's on his stomach there. And I'm not blaming Rask at all. That's on Marchand. That created a 2-on-1 and gave Tarasenko 2 whacks at the thing. Some of the Chara criticism is warranted. He's not good with the puck anymore. And, of course, he's slow. And yes. Watch that play. He almost bailed you out of that play. It's ridiculous.
Really, he's the only reason on that play that they even had a chance. The hockey guys, I think to a man, all saw it the same way. Marchand made a choice early in that play, and he didn't stick to it.
Bill in Kingsborough. Yes, Bill.
Yes. I was just going to say that I think Grizzlick is overrated around here. The little guy cannot clear up guys out in front of the net. He loses most puck battles in the corner. He cannot check his hat. Sure, we're going to miss him, only in the sense that we have to replace him with John Moore. We definitely miss Kevin Miller. He brings a lot of physicality. And also, I do remember last year when we lost to Tampa Bay, we won the first game against them in a very non-physical, finesse-type game. And then in game 2, Tampa Bay came out and pounded the hell out of us, just like St. Louis did last night. I just think we definitely need like a tougher team.
Okay. We'll see about that. I think you're mixing the two, though. Tampa didn't beat you with toughness. What are you, soft? They skated circles around you. I mean, Tampa has some size and some physicality, too. But do you think you got beaten up in that Tampa series? Or you got outskilled? You got outplayed by a vastly more skilled team.
I mean, I don't think the Bruins could get the puck in that series. And so, my recollection is when they got it in the offensive zone, Tampa smothered them.
I mean, how can you equate it? And Tampa did a big smothering D, but and good quality D. But I would not equate the two. I mean, to me, I'm far more comfortable with this 1-1 than the Tampa 1-1. I still think Tampa's got more skill and talent than you. St. Louis does not. You're even in the skill and talent area, if not a slight edge to you. You have more skill and talent than St. Louis. The question is, does their style get to you? And it did in one game. I'm not convinced it's going to happen over 7.
I mean, any Bruins fan over the age of like 45, most of them, not any, most, always equate everything to physicality. Everything. Grizzlick is small. The NHL's smaller now. It's faster. The whole league's different. But he's a third-pairing guy. That's what he is.
But they're going to miss Grizzlick.
They are going to miss him because he can skate the puck out of the zone.
Huge. So you don't need a breakout. It's a one-man breakout. The D gets the puck, and he skates it to the red line. The more guys you can do that in today's NHL, the better off you are. And I'll take that over guys that can, you know, hit you through the glass. So that you're going to miss Grizzlick. Martin on Cape Cod. Go ahead, Martin.
Like, the Bees easily could have dropped that game in the third period. The Blues hit the post, and you had a dribbling puck behind Tuukka that he didn't even seem to know was there. And the OT was all Blues from the puck drop. It looked like they were on the power play from the beginning to the end of that overtime.
Martin.
Yes.
The Bruins got blown out last night 3-2. I agree.
Yeah, the top speed and skill weapon on that St. Louis end, if you really want to boil it down to one player, it's Tarasenko. If he gets even hotter at home, at Bergeron and company, they'll have their hands full trying to contain him, let alone score themselves, which is what's going on now.
Okay, I'm more worried about the defending. I'm more worried about that. Just get back to being even. Play that first line to a wash, and I think the Bruins can win the series because I think their other lines are better. But if you're a -7 collectively as a line, if you've been on the ice for 3 of the 4 even strength goals, that can't happen. So just start with defending. You can defend.
I mean, to me, that's a huge thing. They can't be a negative. And so what should concern you is that Tarasenko's a wing on that line. So in theory, if you're going, you know, man on man, it's not Bergeron who's going to be negating him. Now you're relying on Marchand or Pasternak. That should scare the crap out of you. Like, where's the Marchand who's a pain in someone's ass? Where's that guy who's a pest? Shouldn't he be in Tarasenko's shorts?
Yes.
For crying out loud? Shouldn't he be in there? Like, where is he?
Dan in the car on the Grizzlick hit. Yes, Daniel.
Hey, guys, two quick points. First one, you talk about
whether or not a suspension should come. I agree. You know, the fact that he has a hearing probably means something's coming. I wonder, A, you know, is precedent set because of Tory Krug and the fact that even though he was trying to not avoid the hit, he still ended up being suspended. And Krug even said, you know, I have to take responsibility. You know, the player safety said, you know, we understand he tried to back off.
What are you talking about with Krug? I don't understand what you're talking about with Krug.
Wasn't Krug the one that got suspended back in, was it Columbus?
No, McAvoy.
McAvoy. That's my fault. You know, do you think a precedence is set? And then the other thing that's killing the Bruins, the power play. That's power play unit dangling up the middle. They're getting stopped every time at the blue line. They need to figure it out.
Okay, so they're 2-for-10 on the power play this series. And one of those 10, you know, they were 1-for-5 last night again, but one of those 5 was like a 15-second power play. I think one of them counts after the 4-on-4 burned off at the end of the second.
Sounds right.
And I think that was one of your power plays. So it's... They're really, I think, if you're being fair, about 2-for-9, which is a good percentage.
22%, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It's not god-awful.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, that's a decent percentage. And I think they've sucked.
They have.
I've hated their power play.
Because to me, it's got more to do with the opportunities. Again, last night, they got 3 shots.
3 shots on 5 power plays.
And St. Louis got 3 shorthanded. So you had 5 power plays, and they got as many shots as you did.
So I think they're, and I think it's all about the overpassing of Pastrnak and Marsh. Not all about it, but it's a large part. I mean, the Krejci unit's done nothing either. Except, was that the unit that got the coil goal last night? I mean, obviously it wasn't the erection line that was out there for that power play goal. But I don't know. I think a large part of it is the overpassing of those guys. Get it? You know, has Bennington proven to you to be like impervious?
No. And in fact, I would say on the first 2 goals, I looked at him and I went, oh, this guy's the weak link.
This wall of granite that you can't penetrate? We're not beating Patrick Roy tonight. Do you have that feeling?
No.
Why are you trying to make 13 passes to get the perfect shot? Put it on the guy.
You got me. Again, I think it's more about their D than it is the goalie.
We continue with your reaction right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong. Sorry. Wrong. Sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's time to learn to hate the Blues.
Who the hell are these guys?
It's time to learn to hate the Blues.
Say what we sucks.
It's time to learn to hate the Blues.
Let's go.
I'm getting close to hating the Blues, but I still need more reasons, kid. Help me hate.
Well, how about the stupid city they're from and that stupid arch? I hate that thing. That's no landmark. We got a real landmark with the Bunker Hill Monument.
And don't forget Fenway Park. That's a landmark, not like that arch.
It's like how the floor is set in the town. It's a cathedral, the Cathedral of Boston.
Yeah, I love that movie, and I hate St. Louis.
Yeah, f*** the Blues, and we want the cup.
Felger and Maz headed to St. Louis tomorrow. We'll be broadcasting live outside the Enterprise Center tomorrow.
Yeah, right near the arch.
Saturday night as well. We'll give you a 3.5-hour show up until Dunkin' Donuts pregame on Saturday before game 3. We'll give you a 5-hour show on Monday heading into game 4. So we got a 4-day stint coming up. Felger and Maz in St. Louis. We'll be broadcasting there starting tomorrow for an agenda-free Friday. So that's the schedule coming up this weekend. We continue with your thoughts. Here's Bruce in Maine. Go ahead, Bruce.
Hey, Mike, I know you watch the games. Have you noticed that Bergeron, I mean, he's getting thrown out of the faceoff circle more than he gets a faceoff. And then it's up to Marchand. So the faceoffs have been, I mean, we can't win a faceoff. And that's one of the biggest problems, I think, on the power play. He keeps getting kicked out.
So this has been going on for a while here, Bruce. It wasn't just this year. He's been getting kicked out for a couple of years. And, you know what? This is something I should talk to one of these hockey people about. Amonte, whatever. Does he blatantly cheat, and is he being fairly targeted or unfairly targeted? And you out there, the D-League, Wednesday night men's league guy, I don't want to hear from you because you don't know. Or you can call up and throw crap against the wall like the rest of us. Just don't say, did you play? Do you know? If you know, no. If you know, you can call and tell me. But if you're going to, you know, because of your, because you played knee hockey in your basement, I don't need that guy. Okay? I don't know if he is unfairly targeted or fairly targeted. You know what I mean?
Of course.
I mean, so who knows, right? There's,
yeah,
I mean,
Felge, he's got to get his hand down lower on the shaft of his stick.
There's all sorts of rules that, you know, I kind of know, used to know, don't know. If you're in the D zone, like one guy has to have his stick down first. If you put your stick down first, you're out. You got to, so it's either the home or the road, O zone, D zone. I can't remember. I'm telling you up front, I don't remember. But there's some little technical rules in there with the face off. And does Bergeron violate them? Does he jump the toss? Does he, I don't know. And is he known for it? And so is he properly being thrown out of there because he cheats on the faceoff? Small C, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
And he's just sort of, or does he just win too many of them? And does the opponent cry about it? And I know this is what most Bruins fans are going to think, that, yeah, they hate us because they ain't us. And they're just, you know, they're penalizing him because he's so good at it. I don't know what the answer is, but he does. He gets tossed a crap ton. Yes, Jim?
I believe he was targeted in the 2013 playoff run and accused by other players of cheating. I'm trying to find sound on that.
It would have been Buddy Vermette, wouldn't it?
I say this with all the love in my heart. He's got to be doing something a little gray, right? Because nobody wins the way he wins in faceoffs without manipulating the rules there a little bit. Like, and I say, and again, I'm not calling him a cheater. I think that's too strong. But there's got to be a way to get an edge on those that he can manipulate.
It wasn't last night, 5-13.
I don't have the player actually labeled here on this cut, but this is from the 2013 playoffs and a player accusing Bergeron of cheating.
Go ahead.
They got the best guy in the league, Bergeron, on their team, and it's gonna be hard to beat guys like that. I thought maybe they were cheating a little bit, so I tried to cheat.
Okay, so and that's like not, you know, deflating a football cheating, videotaping cheating. That's, you know, a different form of it. It's just the word that you use. But faceoffs were an issue last night. There's no question about it. John in Boston, what are your thoughts for us today on the Grizzly Kit? What do you got, John?
Felge.
John.
A moment ago, you said on the Grizzly Kit, a moment ago, you said that Sundqvist never ripped his feet. I disagree. You got to go back and look at the video. His right foot leaves the ice first and then his left foot. So at a moment in time, both feet are off the ice. But anyways, I'll tell you why you're wrong about the suspension. One, obviously he left his feet. Two, he targeted the head with no attempt to slow down, even though the numbers were clearly there and you know the rule as far as that goes.
Okay, so John, your phone's mediocre. I'm going to agree with only one of your three things. He made no attempt to slow down. That is absolutely true. And if Grizzly put himself in a certain spot, something bad was going to happen because Sundqvist was going in so hard, he couldn't have stopped. And so you're absolutely right about that. Okay, so that third part is right.
That's what they're going to get him on.
The leaving the feet? Would you please, so just slow it
down? It didn't happen.
Did you slow it down and freeze frame it enough so you could slip a credit card under each skate at one point in time to say he had left his feet? He did not leave his feet. And the other thing of your point is subjective. I don't think he targeted the head. It was the first point of contact, that's for sure.
He hit him in the back.
But was he going for the head? I saw nothing in that indicated he went for the head.
Yeah, see, Murray, I'm with you. I think that if he gets popped here, it's because he hit a guy from behind against the boards and it was a dangerous situation.
And he did nothing to slow himself down.
Correct. Like, that's to me where you can get on Sundqvist for it, right? In this day and age, when the defenseman turns his back, you almost never see him get hit anymore. And in fact, we played the cut earlier. It did happen to Carlo earlier in the game.
Yes, with Blay, I think.
Oh, and he took a shot there. They went after Carlo last night. He took a couple shots early.
But once again, I don't think that was a dirty hit. I think Carlo turned his back to him at the last minute, and that's the only thing Blaze had left to hit. So part of me, this is the hits along the boards are different in open ice because there's a ton of times and crafty teams do it. And the Bruins have sort of become it. They help these penalties, man. And this is sort of a side topic. The two goalie interferences on Rask, he helped those. Each team had one of these stupid tripping calls over the back of the guy's skate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are we doing there? They both embellish those. But the Bruins have gotten I think, pretty proficient at helping these penalty calls because their power play is so good. But anyway, if you're that kind of team, you turn your back at the last minute and take that check in your back along the boards and make a big loud sound up against the glass and get 2 minutes. The Canadians are masters at it.
Yeah, a lot of those hits sound worse than they are.
Of course.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
So, like, those kind of hits, I don't, the hitter, I have a little sympathy for. The open ice hits are different, and the league's clearly gone after. But along the boards for the player who has the puck or in that first position who turns his back, it's a little bit on that guy, that first guy. Pete in Rosendale, go ahead, your thoughts.
Hey, guys. I just thought that, you know, the Bruins looked absolutely terrible last night, and it was all because the Blues just beat the crap out of them. You know, they really just looked like they had their will broken. And the other thing I want to say is, my sister-in-law lives in St. Louis. That place sucks. Have fun out there.
Okay, well, Murray's promised me good barbecue, so I have that going for me. the Bruins in that game looked tired, didn't they?
And particularly at the end.
Yeah, especially in the overtime. And that's what I find a little bit obnoxious, because they had 11 days off. And certain guys, like Charlie McAvoy, he's 21, 22? Like, I'm sorry. Like, this can't be catching up to you this fast in this series. Did they take a beating last night by the Blues? They absolutely did. But I found that almost unbecoming of them at that point. They looked absolutely gassed.
They looked gassed.
Yeah, I think the Blues beat it out of them. That's what I think.
So, which leads me to believe they can't possibly be gassed. Let me rephrase. Could it possibly be that layoff caught up on day two, not day one? Second day hangover. You know what I'm talking about, Murray?
Maybe.
Yeah, sure.
It's like the first one, you're on pure adrenaline, and you just get through it. But it's really the next day that now you played 48 hours earlier. Now your conditioning really comes in, and it second day hangover.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, so maybe.
They awake now?
So there's that. Then there's also, maybe it's just the mental strain. Maybe they just, between the getting beat up physically and whatever, the pressure of the moment, the pressure put on them by St. Louis, it looked like they were tired. Oh, they were also playing with 5D. Let's also say that. You know, they lost Greslick in the first period, so you're playing with one less D. All the minutes go up on all those guys. That has an impact as well. You should say that.
So I think I think they got a beat out of them. And when I say that, also, the Blues had the puck all night. So now you're chasing the puck, and on those occasions, all night. And then when you are getting it, you're getting the crap kicked out of you. Like, to me, they got the stuffing beaten out of them last night.
We're mostly all Bruins Blues today, except we do have to take a couple breathers just to check in on a few other items. The first one will come up next, where Maz will figuratively push all of his chips into the table.
Mm-hmm.
Maz right now is what we call take chasing.
All in.
He's going all in. He's taking all of his take chips.
All in.
And pushing them into the middle of the table. We have a preview of the NBA Finals with Maz's take chasing. And the updated Jimmy Stewart free agency big board.
You don't double or nothing.
Okay? You don't want to miss this. So it's right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
For the first time, the Toronto Raptors, 24-year history, they will be headed to the NBA Finals. Milwaukee just took a timeout. And the Raptors will go up against the two-time defending champion Golden State Warriors. And the Raptors have done it.
All right, little Bruins breather. NBA Finals start tonight. If you listened to the program here last week, we staged what we called a take intervention with Maz.
Our first.
We feel Maz, with some of his takes, has a problem. And we feel that the Steph Curry take that he has represents a rock bottom sort of moment, where Maz's contention is that Steph Curry is not a true number one that you can build around to win a championship in the NBA, even though the Golden State Warriors built around him and won a championship in the NBA. So this is when you know someone has a problem, when there's the facts are right in front of you and you can't acknowledge it. It's called denial.
Yeah.
So we've all experienced this in our personal lives.
Ain't just a river in Egypt.
Drugs, alcohol, gambling, we all know it. You know, it's touched all of us, and now it's touched us here on the program. Maz has a take problem. And so we staged a take intervention last week, and it went very poorly. Pitcher Christopher and the Sopranos.
Okay? It failed miserably.
It went really poorly. So now here we are in the NBA Finals, and there's another litmus test because Durant's out, at least to begin the series. And if the Golden State Warriors win, they will have once again won on the back of Stephen Curry. And so are you able to build around him and win an NBA championship? Maz, how are you approaching this NBA Finals? Who do you like to win this series?
Toronto. I'm telling you. In fact, I think it's now official. I'm leaning financially on the Raptors. That's the way I'm going.
What'd you get, Frauds?
I'm picking Toronto. So I've seen a couple of different things, but anywhere from plus 230 to plus 250, which means, you know, obviously that's on a $100 bet. So you can more than double your money on the Raptors right now.
Yep.
And Golden State, on the flip side, is 300 essentially to win 100. So I like, you know, aside from the odds, I'm telling you, I think the Raptors have a legit chance here
because
they have home court and they have the best player in the series.
You don't believe in Steph Curry as a number one?
That's part of it. Yep, that is part of it. I think it's a little overrated. So I'm taking a little bit of a gamble here because I'm betting that Durant doesn't come back, because if he comes back, Golden State will win. Okay, Golden State will win. And when I say come back, I don't mean for, you know, one game when they're already up 3-0.
You're not going to throw that in our face.
No, I'm not going to throw that in your face. If they're up 3-0 without him and he plays game 4.
What if they're up 2-0? What if they win the first two in Toronto and Durant comes back for 3-4?
If they win the first two in Toronto, I don't think I can throw that in your face either.
Thank you.
Because they're on the road. If they won the first two at home and Durant came back, I might put up some resistance.
I understand.
But the fact that they're on the road, no, I won't do that to you. I'll play it on the up and up.
Thank you.
But I think Kawhi Leonard's the best player in the series. And furthermore, I think that Toronto has the one thing that Golden State does not, which is size in the paint. I think that this is a problem for Golden State. And it's not a perfect apples to apples, but years ago when Dallas played Miami, I picked Dallas because I thought that Miami did not have an answer for Dirk in that series, and I was right.
Oh, blood.
Even though now you say Dirk is not a number one,
yeah,
that you are worthy of building around to win an NBA championship, even though Dallas built around him and won an NBA championship.
One. They won one title, yes.
As you're sensing, folks, Maz still is in the state of denial.
So yeah. I think the true franchise players in that league win multiple championships. That's my point.
Okay.
This is when desperation sits in. It really is. I mean, I've seen this behavior before. We all have. You have dug yourself such a hole with this terrible take about Steph Curry, Maz, that deep down I feel you're so ashamed of it. You're trying to wash that shame away with the quick hit of making a bet on the Raptors.
It's a cry for help.
It is.
I mean, let's face it.
Well, listen, at this stage, if I'm going to lose, I'm going to lose like a big one.
That's what they always go on a bender, right at the very last,
and
right?
And I think you could argue that Kawhi is the best player in the series. And he's going to get his, and he's going to do his thing. But this isn't about Kawhi Leonard. It's the supporting cast. It's guys like Pascal Siakam and Marc Gasol and their inconsistent bench and guys like Fred VanVleet. So, I don't know. I wouldn't make that bet. I hope you win. I think that's foolish.
No, it's worth a gamble, because if I win, you guys are never going to live it down.
This is the last blowout before he goes into take rehab, Murray. He's going to...
This is like your Belushi moment.
It is. Exactly, right.
Yeah, going down in a blaze of glory.
At least he didn't answer the 2-0 question with, can I see how it looks first?
Yeah.
Okay, so I teased this before.
Fine.
Let's update this. I want to get to this. Jimmy Stewart's free agent big board. Jimmy knows things. He hears things. He is a conduit to the inside of the NBA. And so here's the latest that Jimmy knows and believes as it comes to where these guys are going to land in NBA free agency. Where do you want to start, Stu?
Let's start with Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Irving, what's the latest?
Knicks or Lakers?
And the Lakers are a legit factor here.
Yeah, I believe that.
And
oh my God.
And where's Boston on this list?
You hear those crickets?
Boston is what Jimmy's telling me.
Unless you work for the TV rights holder.
Unless you're on the text exchange. So Boston's done. They're finished.
That's how I feel. That's what I believe right now.
Who is Kyrie Irving playing with and where? Well, okay, so I'm sorry. You said the Knicks or the Lakers. Who's he playing with?
Kevin Durant on the Knicks.
That's your bet?
That's my bet.
I wonder what kind of odds I can get on that one.
Okay.
I'll go double or nothing with you, Tony.
Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard, I think, is going to go to the Clippers or the Warriors.
I'll tell you what, I am more convinced than ever that he's going to the Clippers. Did you see Doc Rivers' comment?
No.
That he's the closest thing to Michael Jordan since Michael Jordan?
Oh, love it.
I want to know, did he put on lipstick before he kissed Kawhi's ass? Like, that's what I want to know. Because I hear that and I say, oh, smart move. Tell him how great he is. Kiss his ass. He's going to the Clippers.
Okay. I mean, if you want one team, I would say the Clippers, but I think the Warriors are a second.
So that's interesting. I haven't heard that anywhere else. Why do you think Warriors, Stu? How does that work? Don't they have to lose people for... to be able to afford them?
They can. The NBA cap can be maneuvered in a number of different ways.
It really can't. They would have to lose Durant and Klay Thompson, right?
And Draymond Green. And
Draymond Green.
So they could do a total rebuild around Steph Curry.
Which Maz would advise against. You wouldn't like Kawhi Leonard and Steph Curry?
Well, then it'd be Kawhi Leonard's team. I would like it.
Got it. Okay, so you think Kawhi Leonard to the Warriors is a legit possibility?
Yeah, they will. You'll read a story where the Warriors were the runner-up team to the Clippers.
Okay. What else? What else do we got?
Clips are getting them.
There's a couple trade targets that have come across my text messages. One is Ben Simmons to the Bucks, which doesn't make a lick of sense to me, but that is something that has come across my NBA text messages.
It makes no sense to me.
I don't like it.
We're going to trade. So you'd have to trade a shooter. Middleton and Brogdon are both up. Brogdon's restricted. But you need guys that can shoot on that team, not more guys who can't.
Well, Brogdon can shoot.
No, that's what I'm saying. So I'm not trading away a shooter. I'm not trading Brogdon for Ben Simmons, for example.
I see what you're
saying. What I'm saying is that I'm not trading away my shooters for another guy who can't shoot, especially, you know, Giannis had a hard time as it was at the free throw line in the playoffs here. He totally got the yips on the line. Now you're going to bring a guy who doesn't even want to shoot free throws? How does that make any basketball sense to me?
It doesn't. That's your problem as a Bucks.
But you heard Simmons to the Bucks.
Yeah, that's a rumor that's floating around right now.
Okay, Karl Anthony Towns.
Here, to the Celtics. That's a trade rumor right now that I've been hearing for about 6 weeks now, that Karl Anthony Towns is somebody that is on the Celtics want list. And the theory would be that the Timberwolves are trying to get out of one of their Supermax contracts. They don't want to pay both Wiggins and Towns. Towns would bring them more of a return than Wiggins would.
What would the return look like?
Tatum or Brown, Tatum and Brown, something like that. That would be if Anthony Davis doesn't end up as a Celtic, which some people down the street still think is possible, which it might be.
I think that one's real.
Yeah, you just slipped in there.
I'm sorry. Which one is real?
Towns coming to the Celtics. I think that's a real possibility.
Well, yeah, like Jimmy just said, well, this one I've kind of known about for 6 weeks. It feels like 3 months you've been talking about this behind the scenes, Jimmy. So why are you able to now talk about this? You know,
I've hinted enough, and now I'm just like, full bore, let's go.
I feel like you might know something more.
Yeah, that's reporter speak for effort.
I'm sick of sitting on this one.
I'm not a reporter. I'm a rumor and innuendo monger.
And he's sick of sitting on that one. Anthony Davis, how realistic?
I think he still wants the Lakers. I think that David Griffin is just wasting his time with his PowerPoint presentations and this, that, and the other thing. I think at the end of the day, as we talk now, today, it's going to be Kyrie, LeBron, and Anthony Davis as Lakers.
Oh, my God. Wow.
But I don't sleep on the fact that
you get all the tool bags together in L.A. That's good. The L.A. tool bags.
I don't sleep on the fact that the Knicks could have Kyrie, Durant, and Anthony Davis either.
I mean, you know that New Orleans would rather deal with New York than L.A.
100%.
For some stupid reason. Even though L.A. might have a better, you know, trade package, they're going to go to New York to get them out of the conference and not give the Lakers any satisfaction, which, again, is moronic. So you're going to take a lesser return just because of some grudge or something.
And don't sleep on the fact that the NBA might force Anthony Davis somewhere, you know, in a similar thing where
Chris Paul,
the NFL wasn't upset that Bill Parcells was flirting with the Jets.
Okay. Anything else, Jimmy, quickly before we go to break?
I don't know where Jimmy Butler's going.
Can I make one prediction?
Yep,
please.
The Celtics will get a big man this summer. That's right. Whether it's Davis or Towns, I don't know.
Marc Gasol.
They got to get a big man. How are you going to deal with the freak if you don't have a big man? You got to get a big man.
There's your Bruins breather, a little NBA chatter. You want to weigh in on that? You can. Back to your phones on everything right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Speaking of interventions.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Parayko, high slot to the right circle. Perron back to Parayko. Shoots blocked.
I mean, Nordstrom laying out to block that shot.
He's
on a one
timer
from Parayko. He's hurt.
Parayko high slot, shoots block, rebound in the slot, batted left of the net. Trouble here. Squirts over to the near side. Corrali. Nordstrom still trying to shake it off. High slot, Parayko, and it's blocked again by Nordstrom. Near point, Parayko. Nordstrom going for the block again. Parayko deals to the far point.
The shades of Gregory Campbell.
We all thought the same thing. And at that moment, even though the game had definitely turned in St. Louis's favor, that was the moment, end of the second period. They were on a four-minute power play because Clifton had a stupid high-sticking penalty. Four-minute penalty. Nordstrom is throwing himself in front of those bullets. He's staying on the ice. The crowd is recognizing it. The building gets up. When they finally get a whistle, he limps to the bench. They put him on the board. There's a moment. Anyone who was around, you know, 6 years ago remembers the Gregory Campbell thing. It's like anyone who was in the building there felt it like, here you go. And then the Bruins drew their own penalty, evened off the 4-on-4, got a little power play at the end of the second there where they actually created a chance or two. And this was in the sequence. It might have been 4-on-4 or shorthanded where Marchand had a dead-to-right shot at the net and tried to slip it, of course, once again. Tried to make this ridiculous pass across the seam to Bergeron. And it was broken up. So that was somewhere in that sequence of maybe shorthanded 4-on-4 or just at the end. It was somewhere in there. But, I mean, again, just good Lord, Marchand. What's gotten into this guy with all this dipsy-do crap? But anyway, so I thought there was the Bruins' chance. It was going to be a different game in the third period. They're going to seize control of this thing. There's their momentum shift. Big change in the game, and off you go. They're going to take another game here. And it just obviously didn't happen. St. Louis came out and controlled the third and absolutely shoved it down your gullet in the overtime. So that didn't really have any sort of rub-off impact. But for a moment there, that was looking like quite the moment.
I don't remember who it was that Clifton hit. Who did he hit? Because as soon as the guy put his hand to his mouth and moved his hand, you could see the blood, and I went, uh-oh. And right then and there, I went, oh, geez, they're screwed. So for them to come out of that the way they did, I thought, oh, man, that was massive.
And that moment with Nordstrom, they're taking those bullets.
I thought he was the best Bruin last night. It sounds funny saying that about, you know, Nordstrom, but maybe it's an indictment on all the other guys out there. He was terrific.
He was an absolute animal when they killed off that penalty, the four-minute penalty, where he was hobbled, couldn't move, and then gets down and blocks another shot. It's like, oh, God, like talk about, like that's the epitome of what they've been, the resiliency, all that, the toughness all year long. But, boy, putting your body on the line like that, like I would figure, like, get a whistle, get to the bench. But, nope, stayed out there, took another puck to the body.
And the goal! Who right. knew he had it in him? He showed, like, Krejci and poise there, for crying out loud. Took his time, tucked it in. I was like, wow, where's that been all year? That was a terrific play.
So your depth hasn't been your problem.
Yeah, him, Johansson, Coyle, Rask, for the most part. I thought they were the best Bruins last night. Everyone else pretty much sucked.
I mean, I just think on balance, you've gotten enough in these two games from everyone on the roster not named your first line. And Krejci, I'll put him on the list too. I think he's been a passenger.
Mm-hmm.
Krejci in your first line, your best players, most established players up front have been your worst. And that's an issue. Sean and Lynn, go ahead, Sean.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. So coming into this series, the people seem to make it a lot about how the Blues have been so good on the road. But now that it seems like the Bruins are going on the road, even Amani brought this up last night in the postgame, that the Bruins are in a lot of trouble because they're going into St. Louis. Meanwhile, the Bruins have won 6 games on the road this year, and I believe that St. Louis is going to be a really hostile environment, but could it be any worse than that Game 6 they went into in Toronto?
Yes. But I do agree that the Bruins have been good on the road, 6-2. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves.
I'd equate it to Game 6 in Columbus. I mean, it's a similar kind of thing. Big, loud building, heavy team, you know, not the fastest team, not the most skilled, but a big, heavy team with a big crowd behind them. I think I'm not worried about the Bruins on the road. That's not my issue.
No, they can handle it.
No. Can they handle the size and the grind of the St. Louis Blues? That's number one concern by far. This isn't the NBA. It's rare that you have to worry about the building or the home road. And I don't.
I mean, I think there is a pretty good likelihood you're going to be down 2-1 going into game four. I just think going into that building, game three, after that win, the place is going to be off the charts. The Blues are going to be off the charts. So I think there's a good chance you're down 2-1. That's how I feel right now.
John in Maine, go ahead.
Hey, for me, looking at the series, I'm getting a strong comparison to the Bruins' first cup against Vancouver, except the roles were reversed. You got the Bruins team, who's the smaller team, going against a heavier team that's trying to knock off and really kind of take the physical play to them.
Yep.
Then back then, the Vancouver line was the number one line in hockey, and they paired up Bergeron and Marchand to them.
John,
yeah.
Do you really think that this Bruins team, though, profiles like that Canucks team?
No. I just, from just the standpoint of what's going on and the mentality of the makeup of the game itself, the series. Where
okay, so I'll cut you off. From the Blues standpoint, yes. You want to tell me the Blues are a modern-day replica of that Bruins team? Fine. I don't think you're the Canucks. I think that team was really susceptible, that Canucks team, when you look back in hindsight, from the goaltender out and their mentality and, you know, led by a couple of Euros, and I hate to be so xenophobic, but the Sedins sort of pacifists.
Finesse players.
Pacifist kind of players. And the goalie was more than willing to get inside his own head. And the whole
he was a basket case.
That whole So you're not Vancouver. The Blues might be the 2011 Bruins. I'll give you that if you want. But you're not the Canucks. You got more going on between the ears than that, more below the belt, frankly. So I don't think you're going to, you know, St. Louis may own the physicality matchup, and they may be able to outmuscle you. But I don't think you're going to, quote unquote, succumb to it. You know what I mean? Like the Canucks ultimately did. I don't think that's you. I don't think that's who you've been all year. Continue with your thoughts after Murray's 90-second update. No.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.